It's time to find out more about caterpillars and which ones we shouldn't worry about holding and which ones may have some other effects on us, right? You heard from somebody who was listening in.
Yeah. A Michigan listener by the name of Phil. And Phil lives in Michigan in the summer, and spends his winters in Texas, where he's a professor at a college. And he'd been working in his yard, and he discovered this little caterpillar called a saddleback. And it's an interesting caterpillar. It's got this bright green patch in the middle, and right in the middle is this little brown or sort of purplish dot that's outlined in white. And the hairs on this thing are quite painful. They can inject some kind of a chemical into you that will cause an irritation or even more stronger than irritation. But it prompted me to wonder, because I after talking to Phil, I checked out the range of the saddleback caterpillar and didn't find it in northern Minnesota, to my relief. But it prompted in me this thought, well, gosh, are there other caterpillars in this part of the state that we should at least be aware of, if not avoid? And that sent me to my good friend Jim Sogard, who joins us this morning. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, John.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing well, thank you. Good to be back.
Yeah, nice to have you back again. And you're the author of, and I hope I've got this right, Moths and Caterpillars of the North Woods.
That's correct.
Which is my go-to book for moths and caterpillars. Now, you'll be the first to admit that it doesn't have every moth or caterpillar in it, and that's okay. But it certainly covers...
too many to cover in any one book.
Yeah. You know, just as an aside, I met this fellow up in the bogs of northern Minnesota up at Badette, and he was trapping moths in the bogs, and I think that he said that he had discovered or had found something like, I think it was 1,500 different species of moths in the bogs, or maybe he told me that that's how many species there were in the bogs, and nobody had really gone in and done that kind of work. But he also said that most of those caterpillars are moths are pretty uniformly unidentifiable, that a lot of them had to be determined by DNA.
Yes, that's correct. Or yes, there are some other technical ways to do it, but a lot of them are very hard to identify.
Yeah. So are you familiar with the camelback or the saddleback caterpillar?
I have heard of it, and I have never, fortunately, had more direct contact with it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Well, our friend Phil, who was unfortunate enough to get the thing on his, it got him above the glove on his wrist, and he said that that he's allergic to bee stings, and he wasn't sure how serious this would be, but he said that he went in and put a poultice of baking soda on it, and that seemed to help. But he said for 6 hours there it was quite painful, and then the next day he said he could still see some small red bumps where he'd been inflicted with these hairs.
Yeah, there are a number of species in that family that occur in Minnesota. Fortunately, none of them are nearly as potent in their venom as that one is.
Wow.
They're all very interesting creatures, visually and so forth. And most of them are fairly rare and probably don't reach northern Minnesota very often at all, most of them. But none of them are probably anything to be too concerned about, unless you're a person with unusual sensitivity.
Right. That's always the case. For some of us, it's just an irritation. For others, it's a life-threatening problem.
Right. And there are actually several, we have at least several species of caterpillars here in Minnesota that they're not classically venomous in the sense of having sharp spines full of histamines and proteins and I don't know what list of chemicals, but they are nonetheless capable of causing some people allergic responses. So it's kind of hard to be real hard and fast about saying, you know, this species is okay and this one isn't, because certain individuals may have troubles with things that would not bother most people.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple, and one of them, I think, and maybe I got it wrong, but was it the white line sphinx caterpillar, which is really quite a beautiful caterpillar, but is that one a problem for people?
No, that one is not. None of the sphinx moth caterpillars are, to my knowledge.
Okay.
The one that you may be thinking of is the Io moth.
Yes.
The Io moth is a giant silk moth caterpillar. It's related to our Cecropias and our Luna moths and the big moths that everybody is in love with.
I have seen the Io moth only once. Bright yellow with a big eye spot on the wing. Is that the one?
Yes, they're beautiful. They are, and they're quite common, and they do occur a lot in northern Minnesota. And their caterpillars are fairly potent, not so potent as the saddleback, not nearly as much. The sting is kind of, it feels similar to nettle.
Oh, okay.
A burning nettle sting, but it lasts longer.
Oh, boy.
So it's not all that pleasant.
Yeah.
But it's not for most people with normal sensitivity, no big deal either. It's just it's something you remember for a while.
Yeah. So can you describe the caterpillar?
Yeah, it gets to be quite large. It starts out in they lay their eggs in batches on many plants. They've even been known to lay their eggs on corn. But you can find little clusters of caterpillars when they're fairly young, feeding as a group. They're spiny-looking little buggers. As they get bigger, and they can get to be the better part of the size of an index finger,
whoa,
then they're green, pretty much bright green, with a white and red stripe down the sides.
Ah.
And so they're good-sized, and in all stages, they've got these little tufts of spines distributed over their bodies. And those are the things you want to stay away from.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll post a picture of one on our Season Watch page so that people can kind of know which ones to avoid. Now, would we be likely to run into these caterpillars at this stage? Is this too late in the season for them? Or
I'm thinking it probably is. Now, I couldn't say that with absolute certainty, but I would generally expect them more from midsummer, July sometime, through August maybe.
Okay. And then they are going to, is the term pupate, or do they metamorphose?
Well, it is a form of metamorphosis, but it is called pupation. Yeah, they form a pupa.
Okay.
They spend the winter, and those guys actually spin a silk cocoon, which can be, I believe, most frequently in the leaf litter.
Okay.
And so they're, you may find a cocoon, if you're raking or something, you needn't be worried about the cocoon. Some caterpillars have cocoons that incorporate venomous hairs in the cocoon, and even the cocoon itself can be a problem.
That venom can remain in the hair after it's been woven into the cocoon.
Yes.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah, so it's a defense of the cocoon as well as of the caterpillar.
Yeah, interesting.
Pretty clever creatures.
Yes, yeah. Any idea?
There's another one, John, that is in the same family, also a relative of our silk moths. It's in the same family, different subfamily. And that one is called the, its name is not very appropriate, Nevada buck moth. I don't know how it got that name. But,
yeah.
It occurs in Minnesota, and that one you would find, now that one, again, starts out in a cluster of caterpillars. You would find them in June on low-growing willows in wetlands, and they're dark in coloration, and they too get to be about the size of an index finger.
Wow.
And they are similarly toxic to touch. So in June, look for those around willows, and later in the summer, watch for the big green ones on just about any other tree, or even corn, maybe.
Wow. Now, the Nevada buck moth, I saw a buck moth once, only once, on a mailbox while I was delivering the mail, and I'm trying to remember now. It was distinctly marked. Can you describe that moth a little bit?
I can do it some justice. It's basically black and white.
Yes.
And it's got some orange and red markings on it, and they're pretty chunky.
So
they're not very large. They're much smaller than a Cecropia or a Luna, which some people may, or a Polyphemus. But they're still fairly chunky, good-sized moths.
Yeah.
And interestingly, they fly during the day. And they're out flying now, probably more so in early September.
Oh.
But, the females call during the day, give chemical signals, airborne signals, and the males fly around on sunny days around the middle of the day looking for the females.
Boy, that absolutely describes my experience. Fat, chunky little moth, not little, but smaller than the big silk moths that we're talking about. But and sunny, I remember the day, I remember the mailbox very clearly. Yeah, and so that buck moth or Nevada buck moth is one and the same.
Yeah, there's a number of species of buck moths. It's the taxonomy is really kind of it needs work, which is commonly the case. But in this case, there seems to be some confusion about species ranges and overlaps and so forth. But this one is pretty, the one I'm familiar with here in Minnesota, is pretty clearly the Nevada buck moth because it feeds on willows, whereas the classic buck moth that occurs very nearby, at least in Wisconsin and maybe in Minnesota, that one feeds exclusively on oaks.
Huh. Okay.
But I'm a little confused myself on the taxonomy.
All right. Listen, I want to.
I'm not alone.
Yeah, I want to. I want you to talk about the. Is it notodontid?
Yes.
Caterpillar, I want to hear about that. And then I want to talk a little bit before we run out of time here about what to expect in the way of moths and caterpillars for the winter. So tell us first about the notodontid moth.
Well, the notodontid moths, the family name is, the popular family name is the prominence. And right at the moment, the meaning or the derivation of that common name escapes my memory. But they're very common. There are many species in Minnesota. They tend, as adults, to be rather drab and poorly marked. So they don't catch people's eyes as much as some other moths do. And but the caterpillars have some incredible colorations and markings and shapes and behaviors for defending themselves against predators. And one of those they've got a gland just behind the head capsule on the underside of the body that is capable of squirting a stream of acid. I can't remember if it's formic acid or which form of acid it is. But it's quite potent, and I've seen photographs in scientific papers of people's fingers that have been blistered and lost skin after they've been handling these caterpillars.
Oh, my word. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and they do a number of other very amazing things as well. They've got quite an array of behaviors and adaptations for watching out for themselves.
So caterpillars are not as innocent as they seem. They're not those cheeseburgers for birds that I always describe them as.
The fact that they're still here and is testimony to the fact that they stand up for themselves pretty well. They've got actually their worst enemies are probably not birds, but parasitoid wasps and flies.
Sure,
that's probably the greatest cause of mortality in caterpillars.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for that. Now, what can we expect? I know that there'll be a few moths flying before fall closes them out, and then there'll be some early flyers in the spring. What do most moths do for the winter? Head to Florida?
they seem to disappear, but in point of fact, a few of them do disappear by literally being unable to survive our winters. And unlike our monarch butterflies, they do not, most of them or very few of them, is it known that they have a return migration south. So most of them stay here, excuse me, most of them stay here all the time and they just change life forms. If a moth were to write an autobiography, it could be entitled, I Lived Four Lives. And so between the egg and the caterpillar and the pupa, and the adult, they all live four lives. And interestingly, they live them in various proportions. Like we have moths up here, the big underwing moths that many people have seen that fly suddenly off a tree trunk and flash their bright hind wings. Those spend almost all their lives, including our long winters, as eggs glued to the bark of trees. Whereas our big silk moths, they're still here too, but they're now inside silk cocoons that are woven or attached to the branches of their host plants, trees and shrubs. There are a bunch of tiger moths that are still here. We don't see them flying, but they're caterpillars down in the leaf litter, and they're going to spend most of their lives not as eggs or as pupae, but as caterpillars. And they'll only be adults for a couple of weeks during the summer, any given individual. Just like the Cecropia might be an adult for a week before it dies. It'll be a cocoon, it'll be a pupa inside a cocoon for most of its lifetime. And then the adults, there are a few that actually spend most of their lives as adults. One of them is called the Herald. Beautiful moth with bright orange colorations on it, is known to hibernate inside bat caves.
Wow.
Yeah.
that's kind of like being a peanut butter sandwich in my bedroom, but seems like you wouldn't have much.
It doesn't seem like a good idea.
No, not at all.
But so interestingly, and a few of them will be adults through the winter, and if there's an unusually warm winter night, you might see some moths flying past your deck or sitting on your windows, your lit windows. Most of the time in Minnesota, I don't think that happens too much, but it can happen.
Amazing.
There are moths that'll be out there as adults all winter long.
Astonishing. Jim, we've used...
It's like the morning cloak butterfly, and some of the butterflies here do that too, as you know.
Right, right. Well, Jim, you've given us a brief and interesting glimpse into the lives of moths and caterpillars, and I'm so appreciative. We're going to have to get together and talk some more. You're just a compendium of really interesting information about these moths. Thank you for joining us today.
You're very welcome, John.
We've been speaking with Jim Sogar. Jim is the author of Moths and Caterpillars of the North Woods. And if you haven't got a copy of that book, put it on your list for a Christmas gift because it is truly interesting reading.